What's going on, y'all? Happy Thanksgiving from the jump. This will be uploaded on Thanksgiving. You may be watching this a little bit later, though. It's rivalry week. Tons of football to talk about. Tons of amazing games coming up. Head coaching moves across the country. Lane Kiffin has his The Decision. LeBron, Lane Kiffin, same dude. He has that coming up. Tons of college football stuff to talk about throughout this world, but I'll mainly focus on rivalry week because it is going to be electric. But happy Thanksgiving. I hope you're enjoying NFL, college basketball, other college football games. Like, there are so many sports going on, and they're all good because a feast week for college basketball. The NFL slate is crazy. The college football slate is top tier. It's going to be amazing. But I'm going to start out with the head coaching news and the stuff going around right now. First of all, we have a hiring already. Eric Morris leaving North Texas to go to Oklahoma State. I'm excited personally as a neutral guy that's excited to watch Oklahoma State have the air raid again. The man known as the QB Whisperer, Eric Morris. Known as the QB Whisperer because of who he has groomed through his time. Patrick Mahomes, Baker Mayfield, Cam Ward, John Mateer, Chandler Morris, the list goes on. Now he has Drew Messemaker. Drew Messemaker has gone ballistic this year, has had an insane year, and he's also got a partner in crime that was a freshman named Caleb Hawkins, and those are the two I'm very interested to see if they jump and go with him. They're going to be leaving North Texas, but do they go follow their coach to Oklahoma State? That's going to be the interesting point of this. If they do, that's a legit team already, right off rip. There's no rebuilding anymore because of the transfer portal, NIL, all this different stuff. Stillwater will be rocking next year if those two go and follow, but they'll be getting paid wherever they go. And that's, you can hate that about college sports, but that's the reality of it now. They'll be getting paid pretty well wherever they end up going. So I'm excited about it, though. Eric Morris, you know, he was a name that was floating around for a few different jobs. I think he might have been the favorite for the Arkansas job behind the scenes. But he jumps and takes that Oklahoma State job immediately in a conference that isn't wide open because of BYU, Texas Tech, the teams that have been consistent at the top recently, Arizona State, Utah, like some of the other teams that are up at the top. But you can get yourself in that group very, very quick. And I think he will when he's there in Stillwater. So I'm excited to see the Pokes, man. They're going to be back. They're going to be slinging it all over the field. I'm excited to see. If Drew Messemaker follows, that's going to be a fun bunch right there. And there's going to be receivers flocking the area. And I'd like to see Caleb Hawkins go with him as well. Jim Mora leaves UConn to go to Colorado State. I was genuinely disappointed. I feel like Colorado State is an upgrade. Don't get me wrong. They're going to the Pac-12. It's a better job. But I genuinely think he could have got, I think one of these bigger jobs should have called him. I don't know if Penn State should call him, what should happen here, but like there's jobs open that I think you should be. I think UCLA should have hired him. There's other jobs that I was like, dude, go, like, just go get it. Like, he's a winner. He will win you games. Go get him. But he goes to Colorado State. So that is a massive, massive win for Colorado State. And that's going to help them as they enter into the Pac-12 and into a new era as a program. That's going to help them, you know, have sky-high thoughts going into it where they can maybe win that conference right away and find themselves maybe getting into a playoff in the future because of winning that conference and stuff. So massive, massive hire for Colorado State. That's where I'll leave that because I think he's a phenomenal coach. And then lastly, it hasn't happened yet. It's currently 2 a.m. I just got done watching an unhealthy amount of college basketball. That's the best way to put it. It hasn't happened yet that Alex Golish has been announced to Arkansas, but there's a chance that on Thanksgiving or the following day or over the weekend that he could get named as the next head coach at Arkansas. It is very, very interesting because there's an argument that a lot of people I've seen try to make that maybe going to the Big 12 or ACC where you can actually go in it and win it right away are worth it more. When you go to a job like this, probably not going to win the conference the first few years or really be a threat in it for a little bit. But the SEC, the Big Ten, they're the best of the best. Those are the conferences you want to be in if you're a head coach. Like, you want the challenge. I'm excited to see what he can do at Arkansas. I think obviously it's not happened yet. It seems like all signs are pointing to that. If it doesn't happen, then obviously none of this matters that I'm saying right now. But I think it'd be a great hire. I mean, he's very, very modern offense. He was the OC with the Hendon Hooker Tennessee team that had one of their best seasons in school history. And he's done really well at USF. The only thing, if he leaves there, I hope whatever whoever's behind all the camera footage, whether it's on the Bird Box, backup camera, ring camera, if you know, you know. I hope that guy goes with him, because that's like my favorite social media trend. But lastly, head coaching. Now, I'm not even really going to put any speculation to this, because it seems like I've just tried to look around, read into stuff, and like I've seen from like three different college football media personalities that there's a legit shot that Kalen DeBoer goes to Penn State. I don't know if that's like, I'm not trying to put that out there. Like, that is just word of mouth from other people. It's not me. That's just what I've heard, that he just doesn't necessarily feel the most fit at Alabama. I think it'd be crazy to leave an Alabama job without like being fired or something, but that's the world we live in. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but the last head coach hiring is what I mentioned in the intro, the decision. So it will be happening Saturday morning. I'm interested to see if he just does it on game day. Like, that would be, it'd be something. But after the Egg Bowl, which I'll reference here in a minute, it's gonna happen. I personally think he stays. I think he stays at Ole Miss. But there's a legit shot that LSU's able to pull him. And I think it's funny, because the majority of people think that he takes the LSU job. The second big majority of people thinks he just stays. I feel like Florida's still alive. Like, nobody's talking about him like actually having a, like, he might go to Florida, because of like, he already knows the area. He was coached at FAU. He had to recruit that there. He had to recruit it a little bit when he was the OC at Alabama. He would recruit that at Tennessee. Like, he knows the area, the Southeast. He knows that state very, very well. He's even recruiting it with Ole Miss. So I think if he's in their backyard, it makes it much more likely that he's landing all those Florida kids. And I think there's a chance that Florida gets him, but I think he ultimately stays. So leave a comment of what you think ends up happening with Lane and what happens with this whole scenario of the decision that's going to happen on Saturday morning. I'm excited for it, though. I mean, it's very, very Lane to have this much drama and everything, but that's what we love about Lane. That's why I love the man. So I'm excited for it. But, yeah, leave your comment on where you think he's going to end up going and it's your prediction entirely. Now, on to rivalry week. There are so many phenomenal football games that we're about to watch. And I know this happens every year, and I'm prisoner of the moment every single year. But this is just amazing. And the fact that as a college sports fan, I can go from feast week to rivalry week, like, this is unbelievable. But the slate is next level. So I do usually like on Thanksgiving being able to watch the Egg Bowl. This year, that's not happening. It's the next day at noon. Ole Miss going to Stark Vegas, going to Mississippi State, as a 7.5-point favorite on the road. I mean, it's noon, but those cowbells are going to be rocking. That place is going to be juiced. That's a big line. I think there's going to be a lot of points in this game. I think it's going to go back and forth. Mississippi State's coming off of a bye. I mean, this game, there's a lot of history here. And I think Mississippi State's definitely just live in this one. With all the drama and everything with Lane, I know like players will try to tell you that they're not super involved with it and it's not getting in their head at all, but like, I feel like there's always going to be something in the back of their mind where it's like, man, I wonder what Lane is going to do, because like, it's the next morning. Like, it's going to be crazy. But that game is going to be awesome. That's noon on Friday. The noon triple header is unbelievable this year. 3:30. Clean old-fashioned hate. Georgia Tech. This one's actually neutral. It was played in Athens last year, and it would usually rotate between Bobby Dodd and Sanford. Now it's in Mercedes-Benz. So essentially Georgia Tech home game, because it's the same city. But Georgia's going in there. That's Georgia's second home. They've won a whole lot in there. They beat Oregon in there. They beat Clemson in there. They've won all these games in Mercedes. I definitely think it continues. They're a 2-touchdown favorite. Number 4, Georgia versus number 23, Georgia Tech. I think there's a lot of last year there was some overlooking being done by Georgia, not on purpose, but like they weren't ranked. I think they were like seven. They might have been like 7-4 going into that because I think they went 7-5 last year. But now they're 9-2 with a number by their name. I don't think there should be any overlooking. And Georgia, all year I had wanted them to show us their full form, and we've seen that recently, and I think that's going to be kind of the trend of it. So I think Georgia rolls in this one. Then the night one, Texas A&M, Texas, Lone Star Showdown. 7:30 on Friday, number 3 Texas A&M headed to Austin to number 16 Texas. A Texas team that has had their savior, Arch Manning, continue to look better week by week, game by game. Every single game out, he's continuing to look better and better. You can argue he's played some bad defenses, whatever you want to say. He has looked better nonetheless. A&M is a 1.5-point favorite on the road in a game that I don't know a ton of fans of either fan base, but you can feel as a neutral outsider there's an inferiority thing where there's some ownership being done. Where Texas, for a long time in my life, this game wasn't played. They played last year at Kyle Field. Texas wins. This feels like it's a rivalry where Texas just kind of owns it, at least in recent matchups. I'm very interested to see this one. I think Texas comes out on top in this one. And I will post my picks on Friday on all socials. So go follow all the social medias. You can find it, the Jump Sports on everything. The Jump Sports _ on Instagram. So I'll post those everywhere. I think Texas wins this game. It just gives all the vibes of like Texas has nothing to lose and everything to gain. With a win here, they probably make the college football playoff. They're on the outside looking in. If you beat the number 3 team in the country, especially convincingly, you're sitting there with a good shot to make the college football playoff. And A&M, I feel like there's a chance that they're kind of in their own head a little bit. I know they're starting 11-0, best start since like 92, whatever it is. They haven't ever played in an SEC championship game. I feel like that's probably in their head a little bit. They're like, oh, dude, we've made so much history already. This is the big-time history that we can make right here, and it's going to be in their head, and they fall to Texas. That's just my opinion. That's just the vibes I'm getting. Friday, the duel in the desert. Arizona State. Arizona actually on the road as the 25th ranked team going to the 20th ranked team is a 1.5-point favorite. Both 8-3. This game's going to be awesome. This game is going to be... I feel like it's going to be a shootout, but in a running way. Like, I know Arizona State's getting healthy. They'll be able to pass it a little bit. But I think Arizona's going to put up a lot of points, but it's going to be on the ground as they have, monsters in their backfield. It's going to be awesome to see. So that game's going to be amazing, 25 versus number 20. Two teams that, you know, they're battling for the state bragging rights, and last year wasn't pretty. And there's been times that it wasn't pretty for some of these teams. But both these teams are on the up. With Brent Brennan and Kenny Dillingham, they're pretty confident in it. So that's 9 o'clock on Friday. Getting to Saturday, I'll just start out with the one, the game. The game. Noon, Ohio State at Michigan. This rivalry is the best in the sport. Now, when Alabama-Auburn is up there, it is as good as this one. But the streak has been here for... It's kind of been a streaky rivalry in general, but the streak has been here for Michigan out of these recent years. Now, going through these recent years, it's been 4 straight for Michigan. Then they didn't play COVID year. Then it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 straight for Ohio State. Then 1 Michigan. And then it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 straight for Ohio State again. Then Michigan. Then 2. Then 2. Then 2. Then 2. And it just goes on. But for my entire life, it has been Ohio State owned this rivalry. And so it's felt like out of these 4 years, it felt like they were definitely going to get the one in 2021 to the one at home. That team was stacked. I was like, they'll get that one. But then I was like, they go back to Columbus, it'll probably start to flip, and then Ohio State will win it. And then they throttled them. That was the Donovan Edwards coming out game. Throttled them at home. Then it's Ann Arbor. Another win. And then last year, there is no reason on earth that Michigan should win that game last year. And they do. Now, I think that is a good indication of what is going to happen this year, because there's no reason Michigan should win this game. Ohio State's a 10.5-point favorite on the road. There is no... Oh, it's down to 9.5. There's no reason Ohio State should lose this game, but that's why it gets interesting. Now, last year, Ohio State was not fully Ohio State in that game. And I think that's part of it is a mental block for Ryan Day and company, that they wanted to really prove that they could win in a certain way, and that they could be a dominant, old-fashioned Big Ten team, beat them on the ground, and they were not able to. Because, frankly, Michigan had two of the best defensive linemen in the entire country. Now, they still have Derek Moore this year. Derek Moore is filling in that role of being just elite as an edge rusher. 9.5 sacks for him this year. 34 QB pressures. That's some type of pressure that Julian Sand has not gone through. Thanks to PFF College, they put out this thing for Derek Moore that he had a 92.2% pass rush grade so far this season. Julian Sand is going to be under pressure. Julian Sand is going to have to deliver. And I think Ohio State, instead of going with what they did last year, where they try to show this dominant fashion of football, that they can do an old-fashioned Big Ten ground and pound. I think Jeremiah Smith and Cornell Tate, I think they're both going to end up playing. And I think Ohio State rolls. Now, that, like I said, most of my life, they have won this game. And they have won some of them convincingly. I have a feeling that Ohio State wins and covers the spread and wins in a dominant fashion where they do throw it. And it's not going to be run, obvious passing down on third, and then they get stopped, where it ends up being 13-10 like last year. I think this game's going to go over what the over-under is, 43.5. I think it's going to be over that, but I don't know how high-scoring it's going to be, because I feel like that Ohio State defense is going to be able to stop Michigan. Now, Bryce Underwood has looked amazing at times, and I feel like we are seeing the best version of Michigan as it comes down. They lost their two games of the year earlier in the year, and they continue each week to mold and build themselves up to where it's like, okay, this team is right there and could be a playoff team. They're a win away. They have everything to play for. I feel like Ohio State has, in a way, the monkey off their back because of like the loss last year. It devastated everything. I'm not even a fan of either of them, and I was like genuinely like hurt for Ohio State fans, stunned in a shocking, exciting way for Michigan fans. Like, I was feeling the emotions just as a college football fan last year. I feel like instead of that, they go and they win the national championship. That almost feels like getting the monkey off their back, and they're like, oh, well, we don't need to like worry about like that game and worry about a certain style and everything. Let's just go do us and go win this game. And that's what I feel like is going to happen in this one. Ohio State takes this win for the first time since before COVID. They haven't won a game since 2019. And I think Ohio State gets it done. And that would keep Michigan out. But your quarterback is a freshman. So they're going to be fine. The one thing about Michigan, though, they have receivers that have popped up. And they're going to be fine in the trenches. Their run game is going to be good. And I think what helps me even more confidently say Ohio State's going to win this game comfortably is that there is Bo Jackson, the freshman running back. He's been good, but nobody else really has been. C.J. Donaldson's not been super impressive that I was hoping he would end up being. Last year they had a two-headed monster that was genuinely crazy that they have on the same team. They didn't really perform super great in the game because they were being forced the ball and forced and they don't really have the run option this year of being like, all right, let's just force feed these guys. They're good enough to like run through. They're going to have to throw it. Max Clair, one of the best tight ends in the country. Jeremiah Smith, the best player in the country. Cornell Tate, one of the best receivers in the country. Like, I feel like they're going to win this game comfortably. because they don't feel the need of having to run it in this one. So I think the Buckeyes cover that spread and win in a comfortable way in this one on Saturday. Miami at Pittsburgh. Miami's a 6.5-point favorite. Pittsburgh messed up Georgia Tech's dreams last week. And I think they might do it again. Miami, only a 6.5-point favorite. Going up there, where it's going to be a little chilly. Number 12, Miami. They are in the playoff if it ends today. But I think Pittsburgh might knock them out. That's just off the vibes of this conference has made absolutely zero sense all year. And I think it might continue. So that game's going to be awesome. That's not a rivalry, in my opinion, compared to what these other ones are. But even on rivalry week, we have some good games that aren't necessarily rivalries, but very, very important nonetheless. An old-fashioned rivalry that used to be in different conferences, Oregon and Washington, now in the Big Ten. Number 6, Oregon going to Washington. And I'm a little bit worried because, you know, last week we were like, all right, yeah, they got USC. We'll see what happens. If they can beat USC, they're good. They'll cruise. But then Washington's sitting right there. And Washington has been scary all year. They've got to get healthy. That's going to be the biggest thing. And I'm not fully aware of what their entire roster looks like as of right now, but I still think, even without certain guys, Washington is still very much alive in this game. 6.5-point spread. Dan Lanning, the first couple of years at Oregon, he could not get that Washington monkey off his back. It was Kalen DeBoer beating him, but it was the thing. He could not beat Washington. Seeing that purple over there, it's going to be very, very interesting. And I think Oregon gets out alive, but I think that Washington has a chance to cover that spread and make this one very, very interesting, because this is another one where they really have nothing to lose. And they can just kind of play spoiler and maybe knock the Ducks out of the playoff. LSU at Oklahoma. This game is going to be so low scoring. It's at that 3:30 slate. Luckily, there's some other really, really good matchups at that time slot. Oklahoma needs to roll. It's a 10.5-point favorite. They need to dominate. And that gets them, they're not going to be in the SEC championship, but that gets them shoe into the playoff. A win gets them into the playoff, but I think you can gain some confidence, and your offense needs to catch up with where your defense is, because your defense is a national championship defense. Your offense is a little bit behind. You need to get a good feel good win, get this offense back rolling. And your defense should probably maybe pitch a shutout because of how bad the LSU offense has been, only hanging 13 on Western Kentucky last week and not really being able to score all season long. So maybe try to go pitch a shutout. Like, this is a good feel-good win, should be, for Oklahoma. Also at 3:30, Vanderbilt, number 14, at number 19, Tennessee. Tennessee's a 2.5-point favorite. This feels like the freest game pick of all time. Tennessee's going to win. I just don't see a world where Vanderbilt walks, where Diego Pavia's mom strolls in to Rocky Top and goes into Neyland Stadium and gets out with a win. I don't see it happening. I think there's going to be a lot of points in this one, but I feel like Tennessee probably wins comfortably, and I think they definitely cover 2.5. I don't see Diego doing enough. Diego, I mean, he's going to get his yards. He's going to put up points because of this Tennessee defense not being very good. But that Tennessee offense is going to be clicking. Like, there's still times throughout this year that you could see that Tennessee offense clicking against really, really good teams. They're going to be fine. Now, Tennessee, this is another one. Spoiler. They're not going to get in the playoff, but they have a chance to ruin their rival in a spot that they've never really experienced before. They don't know what this is like. And they have a chance to absolutely end that once and for all. And it's gonna be fun. It feels like it's Tennessee lock to win that, though. The Iron Bowl. Alabama in Jordan-Hare at night. 6.5-point favorite. I can't wait for this one. This game is going to be awesome. 6.5 is such a tough one. Because Auburn, all year, they might be the best 5-6 team in the country. Which, I'm a Kentucky fan. We're a 5-6 team. And we beat Auburn, so I think it's between one of us. But, I mean, that's a debate that real college football sickos are going to have. But Auburn is, like, live. But I feel like they've been live in every single game, and then they end up choking late, like, where they'll be up at half or tied going into the fourth, and then they'll lose by, like, 10. And it's like, how in the world did that happen? I feel like that's going to happen again. Alabama's going to cover the 6.5 on the road in Jordan-Hare. But that Jordan-Hare voodoo magic, first time at night in a while. A couple of years ago, it was at 3:30, I believe. And that was the Jalen Milroe to that was the call. The Isaiah, or what do you say, James Bond, Isaiah Bond, something. But the Isaiah Bond touchdown. That was that game. But now you get full night. It's going to get freaky. It's going to be an awesome game, though. But I do think Alabama wins and takes care of business, and they move on. And if they win this one, they go to the SEC championship, so that's pretty important for them. The Liberty Bell. This one's, I'm just hoping, is a little bit more interesting than what the game line tells us. 21.5 is the line. USC is a favorite. It's in the Los Angeles Coliseum. UCLA going there. I'm just hoping that it's a little bit better than what I'm thinking. Same with this one, Notre Dame at Stanford. I feel like Notre Dame might, like last week, I feel like you could kind of see it a little bit, that they're pumping the Jeremiah Love numbers up, and they're just trying to run and run it. I feel like they're going to win by like 50 because of that. And then the last one I want to mention, which this one's at noon, I just want to mention this because if you are like me and you're a Kentucky fan or you're a Louisville fan, whatever, the Governor's Cup at noon on Saturday, it's going to be buried into that noon slot. Like, obviously, nobody's watching that if you're a neutral fan. You're not watching that over the game. You're not watching that over Miami and Pittsburgh. There's some other good games. But the Governor's Cup, Kentucky-Louisville, it's at Louisville. Both teams are insanely banged up. I think Louisville is going to be without their first and second string running backs, their first and second string receivers, and maybe their starting quarterback. Kentucky's out about the entire defense. All the DBs are just gone. Except for like two, and then the starting tight end's out. So I'm hoping my Cats can win it, and if not, it is going to be really, really ugly in Lexington because they're not going to fire Stoops, even though it maybe should happen. But we'll see what this looks like. But really hoping the Cats win. Louisville's a 3.5-point favorite, I think. I think Kentucky will cover that, but the line is so weird because like 2 years ago we went. As Kentucky, we went into Cardinal Stadium, I think they call it L&N Federal Credit Union Field or something. I don't know what it is now, but we went in there with no business doing that and won by like 7 or 10 or something. And also, Louisville hasn't beat Kentucky on their home field since 2014 because 2016, Lamar fumbled. 2018, Kentucky gave belt. 2020, didn't play them. 2022, that was that one. So... Or no, I guess, no, 2023 was that one. So we started it back, and yeah. So they haven't won on their home field since 2014. That's crazy. So yeah, it's a wild time. Like we've beaten them a pretty bad a couple times, both 10-win seasons. Beat them pretty bad, but we'll see. We'll see if Stoops got a little juice left in him. With all the Louisville D commitments, like I know a lot about this because I'm within the Louisville area, and I'm a big Kentucky fan, but... There's a lot of Louisville D commitments. I don't know if Jeff Brom's taking one of these open jobs that I was referring to earlier in the podcast, but maybe so, because it feels like this Louisville team is about checked out right now. So I think that'll do it, though. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope you have had an amazing Thanksgiving. If you're watching this after, this will come out the morning of Thanksgiving. Comment something that you're thankful for, or go back to what I was talking about at the beginning. Where do you think Lane Kiffin ends up? I'm very thankful for college football. I know that. I'm thankful for every one of you that tuned in to listen to this. And I'm excited for Rivalry Week. Go ahead and comment what picks you have. I'm not recommending betting, but if you have betting lines that you would definitely recommend for people or whatever games you're most excited for, comment those. Let's talk a little bit in these comments. But I'll be back reacting to all these games very, very soon. Peace.